The Fan on Demand. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports, the final hour of Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan, even though Bob McCowan made a guest appearance on his own show. And Elliot Friedman alongside me. Mr. Friedman, you'll be in for the Friday Roundtable tomorrow.
I will. Who else is with us?
I believe it is the solicitor, Gordon Kirk Esquire, and Ken Reed.
Okay.
So there you go.
I wonder if Gordon Kirk gets paid for this, because I think he's made so much commission off all the deals he's put here. He should probably just come in and do it for free.
I don't know. I'll have to find out. I'm sure he'll tell us if we ask. He is the agent to the Stars.
Yes, he is.
And assorted others as well, I might add. The big news of the day in Toronto, of course, and interesting news, I think, given sort of the way things tend to develop in this particular market. Tim Lewicki, the president and CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, has announced that he is stepping down. He will leave his position by June 30th, 2015. A lot of us think that the exit will be a lot sooner than that, whether it's in the fall, as some think, or in the spring. And clearly, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment will have new leadership at some point. I'm one of those people that isn't entirely surprised by that. I know Elliot Friedman had broke the story a couple of days ago that Tim Lewicki was going to leave. We know that there was an MLSE board meeting last night, and essentially I think what happened here, and I think other people feel that way as well as the board heard a bunch of things, and they said, Tim, tell us, are you around for the long haul, or are you either looking elsewhere, are you unhappy? What does the future hold? We now know what the future holds. We don't know exactly what it holds for Tim Lewicki, but we know when his tenure in Toronto will end. Mark Gannis is president of Sports Corp. It's a Chicago-based sports consulting firm, sports business consulting firm, and he joins us on Primetime Sports. Mark, thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure, guys.
Now, obviously, you're very familiar with Tim Lewicki. I'll just ask you flat out, does this surprise you?
Not at all.
Okay.
It doesn't surprise me for a number of reasons. Some of us in the industry have heard that he has been looking around for a little while now. You hear little bits and pieces, and he's a very visible person in the industry. So when inquiries are made or discussed, his name, and his name is associated with it, it can get noticed. This was a, maybe the word odd is the wrong word, but an unusual hire for a group like Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment at the time it was done, for a variety of reasons. This is, MLSE is a mature operation. Tim Lewicki's time in Los Angeles is really highlighted by new things being done or new initiatives, not managing an existing operation. And so you wondered who thought this was going to be a good fit at the outset, because it didn't make great deal of sense at the outset, and obviously, not even a year and a half later, it's being dissolution. So obviously, those people who thought it was not a good fit, knew what they were talking about, and those who did, maybe didn't know that well. Mm-hmm. You look at all those factors, and that he's got a certain aspirations for himself and his career, and you look at the three-headed ownership of MLSE, and it's not a surprise, guys. Not a surprise. Let me add, this would be an incredible position, maybe the best position a pinnacle for someone who really wanted to take one of the all-time greatest and most popular hockey teams ever and bring it, make it a Stanley Cup championship team. Somebody who had a single-minded purpose such as that. This would be, but you know, you never sense that that was exactly where Tim's mindset was.
Mark, I think one of the biggest questions is what's his next step. And as you mentioned, there have been rumors. One of the other rumors I heard was that he wanted to be his own boss and start his own company. Where do you think his future lies?
I think he'll have lots of options, and that may be the best option of all for him. Being his own boss, if he can find some people to back him financially, or he can get into a deal that that he can call his own shots, a deal that's far enough along that he can call his own shots, that really could be the best kind of position for him. He's at a point in his career where maybe answering to owners is not what satisfies him most.
Mark Annis joins us on Primetime Sports. Mark is president and founder of Sports Corp, a Chicago-based sports business consulting firm. Mark, Tim's, I guess the thing that kind of pushed Tim and AG apart ultimately was the NFL bid in Los Angeles. Is Tim the type of guy whose ultimate, most desired position is a guy who is involved in the NFL? Is that the focus of Tim Lewicki's sort of life's work, or is he kind of wired a little differently than that?
I don't know him personally well enough mm-hmm. to say exactly how he's wired, but I from what I had heard, I did not hear that it was the NFL issue that ultimately was the separating factor in Los Angeles, and I'd be surprised if that was the separating factor in Toronto either.
So, now, have you heard, Mark, any rumblings about who the next person in Toronto might be? I know that's a bit out of your bailiwick, but I figured I'd take a shot.
Well, I've heard of who some of the people were that were looked at before Tim was hired, and they are people who are, and without naming names, the qualities are, and the experience are people who are first rate in their industry in managing a sports conglomerate. The thing about MLSC, and I'm glad you asked this question, because really, Tim will do fine for himself, whatever he does, wherever he goes. The real question is, what happens with MLSC? Mm-hmm. What happens with the fans in the future? What's the focus going to be? Is the focus going to be on for the next CEO on building some additional facilities, like the focus was on the Raptors practice facility or BMO Field or that kind of thing? Or is the focus on getting the teams to perform at the existing teams? Not trying to get new ones, I'm saying here, but the existing teams to perform at the best possible level, and isn't really the issue? Shouldn't the at least 50%, if not more, of the job be getting the Leafs to be cup contenders on a year in year out basis, almost more than anything else associated with the operation? That would seem to me to be the a way to really identify success. And if you look at it from that standpoint, look at the people who manage great sports, the great sports conglomerates right now, mm-hmm. or are extraordinary managers of an individual team. You will find that there's a universe that is under 10, the number 10. You can count them on your fingers and have on both hands and have some fingers left over. And that's the group to look at. And then also look at some people who may be over at the leagues or perhaps networks that may be interested, that aren't in the top position, that maybe would be interested in managing their own operation. Those are the kinds of people that you would look at to take this position.
I have to say, Mark, that it's a great answer, very thoughtful, but it's not as exciting if you're not going to name people.
I'll let you do the naming of the names. You guys did a great job. Elliot, you were the one who had this story before anybody else, weren't you?
Yes. And, yeah.
And if I recall, it was then vehemently denied almost immediately. And within a 24-hour cycle, your story turns out to be accurate.
Yeah, you know, I haven't spoken to Tim directly yet. I did speak to some people who know him well. And they said to me that the reason that they denied it at the time was because I used the word soon. And I guess, you know, June 30th, 2015 does not qualify as soon, which is fair. And I think, you know, I will say this, Mark and Jeff, and you guys all know, having worked in this business for a long time, sometimes even when you're right, people have to deny it until the time is right.
So, absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's just, unfortunately, it's just part of the process. You deal with it, you move on.
I guess, Elliot, I don't agree with that.
Okay. All right.
I don't think you bald-faced deny it.
Mm.
You find some other way to give yourself some wiggle room, rather than, you know, we have this famous line here from when Bill Clinton was president in the U.S. It depends on what is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you say, soon, you find some other way. Either you don't answer it, or you just don't. I was taught a long time ago with reporters, you just don't flat out lie to reporters. You may not answer all their questions. You may give yourself some wiggle room, but you don't just flat out lie to them.
Mark Gannis of Sports Corp joins us in Primetime Sports. Mark, I'm going to throw a name out there. And the only reason I'm doing this is I know that at one point he was considered for the Blue Jays job. He's a name that a lot of people in Toronto have sort of indicated to me in the past may have been involved both with MLSE or as a sports manager. And that's Rick Welts of the Golden State Warriors. Would he be the type of guy, I think he's president and CEO is the official title now of the Warriors. Would he be the type of guy that would fit into this or?
He would be. Rick is. I know Rick. He's terrific. He is. He's a great manager. He's got great focus. I wouldn't expect he's going anywhere. I'll tell you that now.
Okay.
Part of the reason for that is because he's got a great project that he's undertaken, which is to build a new arena in downtown San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
for the Golden State Warriors. So that's his baby, and if he's able to get that done, that is a legacy for generations to come. And,
mm-hmm.
and he seems to be very focused on that. So I'd be surprised if he'd go away from that situation. A great project, great team, great ownership. And a great city. So he's very happy where he is. That doesn't mean MLSE is not a phenomenal opportunity. I think he, but I, from what I understand, he is very happy where he is, but that's a great name that may not be one of the first ones that pops up on people's radar.
Is he the type of guy that might fit in here because he's, now try to figure out how to ask this question. I'm of the opinion you need a guy who can come in here and sort of get everybody to work together and build a consensus.
A consensus builder. Yeah.
I don't think you can do that, Mark, if you're a Canadian or if you've been a lifelong Leafs fan. That's just my opinion. You almost need a guy from outside.
Well, you know, Jeff, you know better than I would, and both guys, Jeff and Elliot, you know better than I as to whether the, you know, Canadian or not Canadian, but the first point I think is absolutely, absolutely on point. You need a consensus builder. Right now, the ownership of this entity are two hard competitors in every business it seems they compete in Bell Canada and Rogers, and you've got Larry Tannenbaum. You've got to have first a consensus builder internally. Then externally, you need a consensus builder as well. You need someone who does not want the attention and the spotlight focused on himself or herself, but rather wants the spotlight to be focused on the teams and the star players, and is very happy managing the existing businesses that are there rather than having to expand the empire, because MLSE is a great fully integrated sports conglomerate as it stands. It does not need to be broadened in that regard. It needs to be made the entities that it owns needs to all be made better. That's where, and you need somebody who'd be really happy doing that. Rick Welts would be a phenomenal call. Coming up with that name, guys, was great, because that's not one that would normally be, you know, the first one on people's coming off people's top of their heads, he actually would be a phenomenal choice. His temperament is perfect for it also.
Yeah, you know, that's just been on him for a couple of days, and Damian Cox mentioned on Connected, we taped something earlier, about John Collins from the National Hockey League, who runs the business. And I do believe, Mark, that that when they hired Tim, John was at least somebody they spoke to or discussed about. And he'd be another guy I think would probably be at that level if he was interested.
You're right. I've known John since he was over at the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew John when he was at the NFL, then when he went to the Cleveland Browns, and now that he's over at the NHL. John would be the people of Toronto would be very lucky to have him if this were something that MLSE were interested in and he was interested in moving over. He's got a phenomenal position at the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So getting him would be no easy task. But if it would be a match that could happen, he'd be I think he'd be a wonderful qualifications. You need somebody who's really comfortable in their own skin, and John is that.
Mark, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Very enlightening. Always good to talk to you.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you. And Elliot, again, congratulations. Big story that you broke.
Thanks very much, Mark. I appreciate it.
Take care. That is Mark Gannis. He is president of Sports Corp, president and founder. It's a Chicago-based sports business consulting firm. Does a lot of work with a lot of big people. He's involved in the Yankee Stadium project. He is, how do you describe him? The NFL hires him to do a lot of stuff it doesn't necessarily want people to know that it's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just very quiet behind the scenes stuff. And he is very well versed, obviously, in the MLSE situation. That's a great name from
Damian.
From Damian.
John, yeah, I'd forgotten Collins. About that he was
in the list. And John Collins is the guy who deserves a lot of credit for a lot of the good things that are going on in the NHL right now with the Winter Classic and just the upgrading of TV production, the upgrading of the presentation of the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that the presentation of the NHL right now is on par with any other professional sports league.
You know, I've been to every Winter Classic except two. I missed the two I missed this year were Anaheim, the one in Anaheim, L.A., and I missed one of the New York.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since Edmonton, I've been at every other Winter Classic or Heritage Classic because we've done those games. And it's amazing how much they learned from Edmonton, the first one, and have made it better. Like the one this year, Toronto-Detroit, was the best one I've ever seen. It just was such a spectacular venue and such a spectacular presentation. They do it extremely well now. And I'm really curious to see the one this year with San Jose. I think it's going to be hilarious. I think it's going to be great to watch.
I think it will be too. And John Collins is a big name. And I mean, I can tell you that John Collins is a name. It's not just a hockey name. He's a guy that a lot of other, as Mark Gannis said,
yep,
is involved with the NFL. I know that people in baseball, Major League Baseball, have solicited advice from him. I don't know if he's ever been factored in a job, but I know that the commissioner's office has, in fact, in the past, talked to him about various projects. So there you go. I think a real enlightening conversation. You know, an outsider who knows a lot about MLSE, and essentially, I think we could kind of, Elliot, I don't know if we could come up with a name of a guy to replace Tim Lewicki, but I think after that discussion, you kind of have an idea of who Mark Gannis at least think the type of person,
yep,
you're going to need. And first and foremost, it's got to be a consensus builder.
A name with power.
Yeah.
The name's got gravitas. A consensus builder, absolutely. And somebody who's willing to say, and you know, the thing about Richard Petty is, I really believe at the end, Richard reached a point where he understood that. And he, you know, he hired Brian Colangelo, who was the A1 hire at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He hired Brian Burke, who was the A1 guy at the time. And he stood and let those guys do their jobs. And I think that's the model. I think that's the way it has to be.
And the other thing I found interesting, too, is you're almost hiring someone to maintain a successful business. I mean, obviously, the team hasn't been as successful on the ice as you'd like it to be. But MLSE itself, you're hiring somebody. You don't necessarily need a guy to come in and say, what can I do that's new?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're sort of already... You got hockey, you got basketball, you got soccer, you've got some condos. It's not like we need a big grand project. I mean, I got to tell you, Elliot, the first thing when Tim Lewicki took over, I got a call from a contact in the States in this similar business that Mark was in.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, listen, he said, I guarantee you MLSE is going after a premiership franchise. If Lewicki's involved,
he loves his soccer.
He likes his soccer, but you kind of got the idea even then that Lewicki's a guy you hire if, you know, you go, Tim, I got this great project. I've got some money. I want you to sort of come up with this, make this project work for me, as opposed to, this is what we are. We're doing everything right except one thing. We're not winning in the field. We're not winning in the pitch. We're not winning in the court. And we're not winning in the ice. It's a little different.
You know what? It's funny. I was saying that you talk about the soccer and the premiership.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, last 24 to 48 hours, the people who've come at me the hardest on Twitter saying, I'm hoping you're wrong, have been the soccer fans.
I mean, I love him. I wrote on my Sportsnet column today that
they love the guy.
The people I feel sorry for here are soccer fans. I know a couple of guys who are season ticket holders. I know one guy who's going to give up his season ticket holder. Tim Lewicki talked as a season ticket holder. Tim Lewicki talked him out of it. And the guy said, I talked to the guy today. He said, you know, I felt this guy at my back. Now, who's there?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fascinating to see the way this turns out. Well, if you listen to the show, you know that the OHL and David Branch in particular frequently make appearances because they seem to be doing things that are, a little advanced. The OHL tends to do things, I think, a couple of years before a lot of other organizations decide to do them. The OHL has announced now some new on-ice player safety initiatives in cooperation with the Canadian Hockey League. And one of the focuses here is to cut down in staged fighting. David Branch is the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League, one of our favorites, and he joins us on Primetime Sports. Hello, Mr. Branch.
Hi, Mr. Blair. Nice to be with you, and Mr. Friedman as well.
Now, you're not running for the next CEO of MLSE, are you?
You'd be the first to know, Elliot.
He probably would.
No, after this week, he probably would.
I think you're right.
No, I'm having too much fun where I am. So, I share some of your comments. Mr. Lewicki has been, I think, has done a lot in a short period of time, and that's what you've got to value in terms of what he's meant and what he's done, and, you know, kind of on a selfish point of view, too. He was very instrumental in bringing the World Junior Tournament to
right.
Montreal, Toronto. So, he's quite a man.
Now, David, talk to us a little bit about they're called initiatives, but it seems to me that you've sort of addressed a number of situations involving stage fighting and, again, the OHL taking steps to try to stay within the frame or the context of what we consider to be good physical hockey while mitigating some of the unnecessary stuff. Talk to us a little bit about some of these initiatives you're taking.
Yeah, you really kind of, I think, framed it well. I think those of us that love the game value it for its speed, its skill, and its toughness, and we're not trying to anyway diminish that. We're trying to enhance it, quite frankly, by taking away some things that really don't belong in our game and, as we say, hopefully work towards eliminating the one-dimensional player, which I think all hockey at all levels has largely arrived at. So now it's a case of continuing to challenge the evolution of our game. And, you know, it's interesting, and this isn't just all about fighting what we've mm-hmm. done here. It is about safety, hitting from behind, checking to the head, and all those things. But an interesting statistic, which I think it has merits to articulate here, is last season we had 37% of our players who did not have one fight,
mm-hmm.
and 60% of our players had one fight or less. So I think you really see the trends, and it allows us to enjoy attracting the Connor McDavids of the world and, you know, before him, Aaron Ekblad, and so many. We've been very fortunate, and it's those players that make our game so very, very special in so many different ways. So this is in concert with the Western and Quebec Major Junior Hockey Leagues. Also, I can point out, I know that Colin Campbell and his hockey operations, we share ideas, we trade in ideas, and they've been a great support in, you know, articulating some ideas that maybe we can put in and they can monitor and watch and So together, hopefully, we'll continue to move the game in the right direction.
So now, if there is a fight occurring immediately following any face-off during the game, the players involved will receive game misconducts in addition to the major penalty, correct? That's kind of that's the staged fighting rule.
That's the stage fighting rule. And before, our stage fighting was just simply at the start of any period of the game. And we've broadened that now to include, as you've described, at any time. And all such incidents are reviewed. The game misconduct assessed at the start of the period of any game carries with it an automatic one-game suspension. If during the broadening of this rule, if there's a game misconduct for a fight following face-off later in the period, shall we say, it'll be reviewed. And determination at that time, we'll see whether or not supplementary discipline should in fact be brought forward. So we think this is a real good step in the right direction. And then the whole issue of, repeat offenders, whether it's now even minor penalties, making sure that we are monitoring those players and addressing it with them and their team, and once again, if need be, applying some sanction if warranted.
David, I remember when the NHL briefly discussed the stage faceoffs. One of the arguments that came up was, okay, well, what happens if the puck drops and the players wait 3 to 5 seconds, or they skate around 10 seconds staring at each other and then fighting? Is that a stage fight? Like, did you guys have that debate too?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's the great thing about hockey people. I mean, they really drill down. They keep you on your toes. But the spirit is, in that instance that you've just described, Elliot, that would be a stage fight, And so the best time to bring about some change is the off season, when everyone is kind of removed from the action, shall we say, for a period of time. And, our training camps start next week, and our season starts, third week of September. So we're getting ready and introducing and announcing, shall we say, the new rules now. So, yeah, it's a process.
At any point in this conversation, David, because I always wonder when or if this day is going to come, the discussion come up about any fight is an automatic game misconduct?
Great question. To me, one of the enlightened discussions we now have that I can recall certainly a few years ago that you never had was that very point. Mm-hmm. And that is under discussion. And there's merits to it. And, of course, there's some valid reasons that you have to be cautious and careful as you analyze what might result if players, are not, in any way allowed to fight. So, it's an argument and a discussion that we're now having. And it's no different, Elliot, than you may remember, and Jeff, going back in 2006, which is now a few years ago, the OHL introduced, there's no such thing as a legal check to the head.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, wow, we were going to take out the physicality of our game. We were going to change the game. Well, that's not been the case. And of course, I think now there's so much more information out there at all levels of the game as to the concerns about head injuries and how dastardly they can be, that most leagues now have that rule. And that's one that I think, it's interesting to hear the culture now talking about concerns about safety and the welfare of the players going forward.
David Branch joins us on Primetime Sports. As a result of these initiatives, among other things, if a player receives a fourth minor penalty during the regular season for checking from behind, checking to the head, kneeing, clipping, or boarding, he will receive a one-game suspension for each subsequent minor penalty in any of the particular categories. The suspension will be increased accordingly. I'm looking at some of these rules here. And what I like about this, David, is, essentially what you're doing here, stuff's going to happen in hockey, and people are going to make mistakes in hockey. It seems as if you're sort of going after the recidivist here, right? The guy who is repeatedly hitting from behind or repeatedly kneeing?
Absolutely. Once again, you framed it in accurately. That's the approach. That's the thinking. And I'm sure most people would agree that all those type of penalties are very concerning in terms of the potential for injury. And the fact there was no injury, hey, we're trying to address it before one occurs. So it's, I think, a very positive move in the right direction.
You kind of alluded to this, Dave, in the one of the last questions I asked you, but when it comes to the whole fighting debate, there are a lot of people who I consider very reasonable people who are afraid of the idea of a hockey game without fighting. They feel it's still very important as a deterrent against the things that they don't want in the game. Do you still believe that?
Personally, no. I look at our game when it's played, you know, at the World Juniors, at the Olympics, at the World Championships, and even during the Memorial Cup. I mean, they're largely devoid of any fighting, and those games are looked upon and appreciated for everything that hockey stands for. And what I don't like is people that don't really know the game, I think, have a dim view of the fighting aspect in relation to the overall game. And it also goes to the challenges that we have in this country, and we're not alone, about attracting new Canadians and just generally, educating and helping to support parents make the decision to enroll their son or daughter into our game at the grassroots level. And because that's a big issue in our country, is the recruitment of players to play our game.
Go ahead, Al.
I'm good.
David, it was great of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Again, these initiatives are...
They're interesting.
And my senses, we're probably going to see them augmented in other leagues down the road. Thanks so much for doing this, as always.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, guys.
Take care.
Thanks very much, David.
David Branch, OHL Commissioner, President of the CHL. Just, again, very, very quickly to sum up the rules, Elliot, it's you're not eliminating the physical nature of the game here. You're kind of getting rid of some of the stuff on the outside, the staged fight. I love this fourth minor penalty thing. You're going after guys who repeatedly do it, because one of the things hockey people talk about, and they're absolutely right, is by the nature of the game, there's a chance you're going to make a mistake.
Yep.
It doesn't matter whether you're a dirty player or a clean player. Well, these rules accept that. What they don't accept is repeated, quote unquote, mistakes.
Well, if you get four minor penalties in a year for either checking from behind, checking to the head, kneeing, clipping, or boarding, you're doing something that needs to be corrected.
Right.
So I do agree with that. You want to make it punitive, but not in a way that you're punishing accidental play in a fast game. I agree. You're totally right about that. I find that rule very interesting. I think the thing, and he did talk about it there. Whenever the OHL or another of the junior leagues do this, I think they do talk to the NHL about this.
Sure.
And, you know, Colin Campbell's a guy who's at times raised the question of the future of fighting because guys are better trained in it. I am a guy, like, I think there are, like I said, there's a lot of reasonable people out there, guys who I think aren't crazy violent
people. Yeah, there's a lot of smart people
who believe
like
fighting needs to stay.
Yeah, I shouldn't say they don't like it. They believe it needs to stay.
They believe
right.
It needs to stay. And I tend to be in that position too. So I do see what David Branch is doing, and I do see what the NHL is doing. If you're going to change the mentality, you can't start it at the NHL level. It's like this whole thing with visors. It took them 25 years to get it approved at the NHL level, but they had to make sure that everybody was used to wearing it for a generation first. And it's sort of like you want to move the line, but you got to move it slowly.
The interesting thing is going to be defining, and this will probably be a work in process, but defining what is a staged fight. You brought the point: pucks drop, two guys circle around for 10 seconds, and go at it. Is it?
That's a staged fight, according to what he said.
What if the pucks drop and there's a scramble for it in the faceoff circle and two guys drop their gloves? Is that a staged fight? See, that's...
Well, are they playing the puck?
Okay.
Like, I think that's basically what he's saying. Like, he's talking about the stare down.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so if the puck drops and two guys just stand there for 3 seconds and then go at each other, stage fight.
Yeah.
At least that's what the impression I have from what Dave was saying. If they skate up and down the ice and wait 10 seconds, but they're staring at each other the whole time, I think what it comes down to is, can they review the tape and say, this is something where you could tell, like, one guy said to the other, I'll see you later in this shift. Now, I don't know that 100%. That's my impression. But it sounds like if it's something that's created from the faceoff without any actual play being the reason for it, that's going to be a stage fight. And I know that when that came up in the NHL, that was the big debate.
The David Branch, he always seems to give us something to think about in the offseason. Elliot and I will continue our discussion. We'll wrap things up when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're back. It is the stretch drive of Primetime Sports for Thursday. Tomorrow's roundtable will be yours truly, Jeff Blair, Elliot Friedman, Ken Reed, and Gord Kirk Esquire. It'd be good to get a lawyer's take. Kirk probably already knows who's going to replace Tim Lewicki.
He might, yes.
He really might. He's negotiating his contract.
That's right. You know what? Now I'm trying to think. Gord probably would.
But he wouldn't tell us.
See, that's no
fun.
And you know what? He should not be invited.
Because
Gord,
that.
You are not allowed on the show tomorrow unless you tell us who the next president and CEO of MLSE is. Because we know you know.
And I'll tell you what. I bet Gannis has a short list of the guy
I bet
he's got a short list of two or
there
three.
There was a reason why he didn't want to bring up any names.
Yes.
Because he wasn't giving us any hints.
Yeah. I like the John Collins thing from Cox. I like that. Anyhow, we'll have to see if that plays out. Elliot, I want to continue the discussion about this these rules at the OHL, the CHL, the on-ice safety initiatives, because we touched on a couple of them. But some of the other rules, if a player receives a third game misconduct during the season for a combination of any 5-minute major and game misconduct penalties for checking to the head, checking from behind, boarding, kneeing and clipping, he will be given an automatic 1-game suspension, and for each subsequent game misconduct, the suspension will be increased accordingly. Third minor penalty for instigating during the season gets you an automatic 1-game suspension. Again, for each subsequent instigating minor penalty, that suspension is increased accordingly. Player can only receive 2 fighting majors before he's given a game misconduct, as opposed to 3.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That is a big one. And each OHL member team will have a threshold of 3 major penalties for fighting during each game. A disciplinary fine shall be assessed for each team exceeding such threshold. And what I find interesting about that is one of the discussions here, Elliot, and I know you guys talked about it an awful lot in Hockey Night in Canada, is this idea that at some point maybe you've got to go beyond just simply penalizing the players. Maybe you look at the coach. Maybe you look at the team. You know, somebody came up with the idea a while ago of having almost instituting a fair play rule in the NHL where a team might get an extra draft choice between the first and second round or something.
I'd never heard that one seriously debated. I'm sure it was suggested because us journalists suggest all sorts of wacky
ideas. Oh, yeah, of course. We've got great ideas.
I've never heard that one come up. I know the idea. I mean, obviously the idea of teams or coaches getting fined is much more on the front burner now. Like, for example, in the last 5 minutes, if there's an instigator, a coach can be fined.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, those things are definitely heading in that direction. No question about that. So, but I do think that we are seeing a situation where they're trying to move the line on this,
mm-hmm.
on fighting. And I would be curious to know, and David Branch said, I guess, 30% of his players had no fights, and about 60% of his players had one. So he's only talking about approximately 10% of his players would have, you know, more than one fight. I wonder in the NHL what the number is now. I'm sure somebody out there right now who's listening to this.
I don't know.
You suggest this can go figure this out.
Elliot, they've all been hired by the Leafs.
That's right. I'm sure there's one or two of you out there.
There's nobody left to crunch numbers anymore.
But, you know, it says to me that probably, and it might take 25 years. Like, it might take 20, 25 years. But we're heading to the day where there's going to be a game misconduct for fighting. And ultimately, depending on how many you get, you're going to get an additional game suspension, but it might take 20, 25 years to get there. It just might take that long.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been the end game. I mean, I'm one of these people. I don't like fighting in hockey. I just find it boring a lot of times. But at the same time, Elliot, I just don't think you can get. I don't think you can get rid of it. I think what you have to do is essentially move, as you say, move it point by point, and eventually we will get to the idea where, you know what? Fighting is, there are going to be games where you're going to have a fight. It's just going to happen. Two guys are going to get upset at each other.
Or something's going to happen.
And then you're given a game misconduct.
But I think as part of that, they really are going to have to penalize rat-like behavior. Like, you can't get away with that stuff. If you're going to take fighting out, then if somebody does something and they're... They instigate a player into something, the penalties for the instigator have to be as serious. And I'm not talking about the instigator penalty that's there now. I'm talking about a guy who, I don't know, slashes a guy first and it leads to something where another guy gets a penalty. You have to go after that guy too. Because if you really want to take the fighting out and you don't want to make the sport impossible, the rats have to be penalized as well.
Well, yeah, I do believe... And this gets to what you said earlier. I do believe that there is a self-policing aspect to the game. I think you see it in every sport. It's just, you've got it in baseball, right? You throw at a guy, okay, I'm going to respond, I'm going to retaliate. I'm sort of allowed to do it once, and then we're even. Every sport self-polices. Hockey, it's just that sometimes the self-policing is so obvious, I guess, is what I'm getting at with hockey sometimes.
I remember a column that Mitch Albom once wrote, like in the glory days of the Bad Boys, like the late 80s to early 90s, and he took John Sally to a hockey game, and I think it was the first game John Sally ever went to, and they started fighting, and he was like, what do these guys get, like 20 games for this? Oh no, 5 minutes. And John Sally was like, 5 minutes? Like, you can do that? And I think it's hilarious to think about how that thought has evolved over time. By the way, I wanted to credit something mm-hmm. here. Curtis Larson, the Toronto Sun, spoke to Bezbachenko from Toronto.
Tim Bezbachenko, yeah. Yep.
So they were asking him about Lywicki. And what Bezbachenko told Larson was that Larry Tenenbaum called him last night personally to let him know what was going on and to assure him that they still realize the importance of TFC, even though Tim Lywicki's expiration date is now set at the latest point in stone. Because we've talked about this. The soccer fans unquestionably are the ones who are the least happy about this. So it looks as if MLSE realizes that and made sure the soccer team knew about it before news broke last night and said, don't worry, your vision in this arena is not going to be dissipated.
Well, I know we'll talk about this tomorrow in the roundtable as well, but because I think that basketball fans and TFC fans have felt under Tim Lewicki that I think they've gotten a little more because Lewicki's a bit of he's a soccer guy and a basketball guy. And I think basketball and soccer fans have sort of looked at Tim Lewicki as the guy who's going to give us our share of the MLSE pie.
Yeah.
It's not all going to be hockey. And, you know, we haven't talked about the Raptors yet, but they've got a lot of initiatives going on. And my guess is that Raptors fans in some ways as well tomorrow morning will say, okay, all the sexy stuff we've done with Drake and with the All-Star game, where does that stand with Lewicki? With Lewicki gone?
Yeah, you believe in the on-court. Like, you look at Ujiri and you say, we're fine there. You're not worried about that. Yeah, it's all the other stuff. It's a great question. Like, 2 weeks ago, you've got Drake begging Kevin Durant to come to Toronto. Like, where does that go?
We will have a lot to talk about tomorrow with the Tim Lewicki story. I do believe it will be the gift that keeps on giving. For Ken Reed, Elliot Friedman, everybody behind the glass, all our guests. This is Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on Primetime Sports. Talk to you tomorrow.